Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City Council meeting, City of Arroyo Grande. Is this mic on? Can you hear? City of Arroyo Grande for March 13th. Roll call, please.
Council Board Member Costello.
Here.
Council Board Member Guthrie.
Here.
Council Board Member Fellows.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Arnold.
Here.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara.
Here. Item 3 is our flag salute. This evening we have Boy Scout Troop 26 to lead us in the flag salute. And also our invocation this evening will be given by Pastor Robert Underwood, First United Methodist Church. And if you would, please remain standing after the flag salute for the invocation. Gentlemen, that's your cue.
States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Guide us in the leadership of our council and toward the well-being of all citizens in our community. Amen.
Okay, gentlemen, are you familiar with the routine? If you give the flag salute, you get to tell us about Troop 26 and what you guys have been up to. So feel free to use a microphone if you want, and you're all on television. Okay, but don't let that bother you.
Hi, I'm Eric Weiss from Troop 26. And in our Scout Troop, we do a lot of high adventure activities. We've been to all the high adventure BSA certified troop or camps. And last summer we went to Minnesota for Northern Tier, and we went canoeing and backpacking in the boundary waters, and we went fishing, and it was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun, and it was a great experience. So,
okay. Hi, my name is Mike Cornforth from Troop 26, of course. One of the things that not just our troop is doing, but the whole of, well, I guess the world is doing, is the World Scout Jamboree, which I will be attending this summer in London, in Chelmsford, which is just outside of London, actually, where scouts from all different countries can come together and enjoy what we love best about scouting. So I'll be going to that and being able to meet other scouts from other countries, and so that should be a lot of fun, which is open to any scout throughout the world. So I'm really excited about that.
I'm Spencer Sterling from Troop 26, and this summer we're going on another high adventure trip to Alaska. I can't remember the name of the place where but we're going to be kayaking out in the open ocean and fishing for salmon and climbing glaciers, and so it should be a lot of fun.
Okay, and are you going to bring some of that salmon back here to the city? And when that happens, would you please keep City Council in mind if you have more than you can handle? And the last question I have for you, are all three of you going to hang in and go for Eagle?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Well, we want to thank you for being here this evening, gentlemen, and we would like you to come back sometime in the future and do our... And the first one, I have the privilege of presenting it to one of our own employees. I'd like Walt Cusick to join me up here at the podium. Good evening, Walt. For those of you who are not aware of it, we have a program here in the city of Arroyo Grande. It's called the Platinum Service Award Program, and it goes to employees who do just a little bit extra above and beyond the call of duty, and we like to recognize those employees. Many instances, as a result of their efforts, it saves the city a considerable amount of money and just improves the overall operation. And so this evening, we have the pleasure of honoring and recognizing our city information technology manager, Walt Cusack. Walt began with the city on a contract basis through the County of San Luis Obispo in 2001, and he was hired full-time by the city in July 1st 2005, and Walt is responsible for maintaining the entire city computer network infrastructure system. He provides end-user support to all of the city departments. Some of his more recent accomplishments have been to complete significant work on the network migration project, and he's been converting the city's operating system from a Novell environment to a Microsoft environment. That project included the implementation of a new email program, which we have all sort of suffered through a little bit, but we're there and it's working really great. And that also involved the coordination and timing and training to assist the city staff so that everyone could operate it effectively. Walt has also been working on another very important project for the city, and that's our geographical information system, developing a comprehensive city network security policy and developing an automated permit system to streamline and simplify the existing process. And this is obviously a process that benefits our community as well, because many more services now can be offered online. Walt is one of our more popular employees. He's well-liked by the entire organization, and it's very obvious that his contributions to the city's information technology function and its overall service would not be in its current wonderful position if it was not for the progressive efforts of Walt. It's a good deal of money. We have a check here for, let's see, if it was $5,000? No? It's $50. It's $50. It's actually a gift certificate for you and your family, and we hope you put it to good use. And please feel free if you'd like to say something. This would be an opportunity.
Well, thank you. Working in IT, sometimes you're kind of the man behind the curtain, so it's always nice to get a commendation and get a little recognition. City's a great place to work. The staff's always been real good, so it kind of makes my job a little bit easier. So thank you.
Okay, our next presentation is a honorary proclamation recognizing March 2007 as American Red Cross Month, and I'd like to ask Sally Wise to come forward. How are you today? Sally, with your permission, I'm going to read some of the whereases in this proclamation because I think it's very fitting and will help to educate the community and our audience this evening on all of the wonderful things that the Red Cross does. Whereas America has always been a place of humanitarian action and compassion, a place where people take care of each other and are always willing to reach out and provide help to others in need, whether they are down the block or around the globe. The American desire to put our compassion into action is deeply rooted in the character of San Luis Obispo County. And whereas, as we celebrate our 90th year, the Red Cross in San Luis Obispo County is the place where citizens join together and the generosity and compassion of the American people finds purpose. It's the place where someone who may not know you will give Someone who may not know you, pardon me, will give you their time, money, and life-saving skill, save you from drowning, render first aid, or provide you with shelter. Never has this been more evident than in the past few years when the San Simeon earthquake wreaked havoc on our community and a deadly tornado struck Florida. San Luis Obispo County responded swiftly and generously and in overwhelming numbers chose their Red Cross as the place to turn their caring into action. And whereas recognizing that suffering knows no borders, the Red Cross provides assistance during international emergencies such as tsunamis, and they have also spearheaded a campaign. We are celebrating the humanitarian and volunteer spirit here in San Luis Obispo County and all across America. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Tony Ferrara, mayor of the city of Arroyo Grande, on behalf of the city council, do hereby proclaim March 2007 as American Red Cross Month in the city of Arroyo Grande, and we urge all Americans to continue to volunteer their time, donate blood and money, and give generously to the American Red Cross. So it's my pleasure, Sally, to present this to you this evening.
Thank you.
here you are, and we would like you to say a few words, if you would.
I'd be glad to. It is our 90th anniversary. We're very proud of that. We have a wonderful core of volunteers who we could not do without, and a wonderful community that we serve who always step up to the plate every time any kind of disaster happens. So on behalf of the Swell County chapter, I'd like to thank the mayor and the council for your proclamation.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. All right, we have one additional special presentation this evening, 5C, and this is a presentation by the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control District and Water Conservation District Zone 3, and we're going to be looking at interim downstream release schedules. Don?
Yes, good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. I'd like to introduce Mark Hutchinson. Mark is an environmentalist with the Public Works Department with the county. And he's going to give us a brief presentation tonight on the interim downstream release schedule. Mark?
Okay, before we get started, can we cut that center bank of lights in the back, please? Good. Thank you. Okay, we're all set, Mark.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Mark Hutchinson. I am the Environmental Programs Manager for the San Luis Obispo County Department of Public Works. And tonight I'm bringing you this update as staff of the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. As you're probably aware, the district has been involved in the preparation of a habitat conservation plan for a number of years. I believe we're going on year number 9 at this point. The focus of that habitat conservation plan is to allow the district to continue to operate the dam in a manner that is in conformance with the federal endangered species. Of course, one of the important things to note is that over lunch we worked very hard to name it with an acronym that we could pronounce. So if I say the word IDRIS, I'm referring to the entire plan. Next slide, Don. The reason that we developed the interim downstream release schedule is illustrated by this slide, which is a page out of the program itself. As you can see, the project currently has municipal contracts that total 4,530 acre-feet per year. Through agreement with the resource agencies and also to satisfy the downstream water needs of streamside users, primarily farming entrants, we currently release a total of 4,404 acre-feet per year, with a total demand that exceeds the calculated safe yield of the reservoir by 204 acre-feet per year on an annual basis. I first should stop and point out that safe annual yields are calculated very conservatively. This one has been confirmed to be an accurate number. 204 acre-feet is certainly within the range that you would expect, on one hand, to perhaps be acceptable, given that that number is conservative. However, this plan was developed in consultation with your advisory committee and technical advisory committee, and they felt very strongly that we should not erode the conservative approach that we take to operating the dam. And although 204 acre-feet does not appear to be a large number, during a series of dry years, we were concerned that it could develop into an issue. So we did work with the Technical Advisory Committee through a number of iterations, and finally with the Advisory Committee to develop this program. Next slide, please. The objectives of the program are first and foremost to meet our contractual responsibilities with South County cities and water purveyors. We want to have no discernible impacts to steelhead, which is the primary listed endangered species of 3 that is highly dependent on stream flows. We need to continue to meet agricultural needs, both as a matter of policy and as a matter of law. And lastly, we hope that we could develop a plan that would generate additional data that would be pertinent to continuing to move the HCP forward to approval. Next slide. The approach that we finally settled on was simply to do release reductions during the wet season. Now, the dam currently releases on a daily basis 6 cubic feet per second. That's 24 hours a day, 365 days a year as a minimum flow. In July and August, by the way, that accounts to about 4 million gallons a day. In July and August, to make sure that the streamside aquifers stay available to farmers, we increase that flow for an average of 60 days to us that we would need to be able to monitor the stream very closely, both to make sure that we did not harm steelhead anyway, and also to develop a record to be able to show any interested agencies that we, in fact, were responsible for those species. We also needed to keep a positive cost-benefit ratio in mind. We believe that we can easily save 204 acre feet, but the question at what cost is always in the back of your mind. This slide is a simplified one, and I think my pointer works. What this simply shows is four different release rates, trying to illustrate what we're essentially doing with the interim downstream release. This dark blue line that's fairly level illustrates 6 cubic feet per second on an annual basis if you take this to be a 12-month scale, showing a summertime bump up. The dashed green line is from the Habitat Conservation Plan. That's a simplification of what we would be doing in summer months when we have low reservoir levels. And then this funny orange line is what would be going on with the reservoir when we have very high reservoir levels, high reserves, and that illustrates some of the techniques that the Habitat Conservation Plan would use to enhance habitat. Those actually illustrate what are called attraction flows. But the purple line shows a wet season reduction. This simply illustrates a 90-day reduction down to 3 cubic feet per second, which we'll see would save us up to 500 acre feet a year for storage in the reservoir. Of course, a plan like this always generates certain concerns, potential costs, potential risks. We put those into two categories. The first concern and risk is that we might somehow commit a take of a listed species, which isn't necessarily kill a fish, but also harm the habitat or harass the fish, limit any of its essential life habitats. And the second negative potential would be that we spend the money and don't generate any benefits, benefits meaning additional storage in the dam. Next slide. So our approach to mitigate those risks is threefold. First of all, a careful flow monitoring program. I can tell you that the creek previously had two stream gauges, one at Cachetti Road and one here in downtown Arroyo Grande. We've added a third gauge at the Rodriguez Bridge, which is the first stream crossing below the dam. And all three gauges have been updated so that they are instant read, real-time gauges via the internet. So we can sit in the office and watch what's happening to the dam. We can also record that data and correlate it to the release rates that we're currently operating at. For the first individual staff members, and are fairly well able to understand if they have serious concerns about what we're doing with it. And we've also taken a conservative budget approach. Early on, the Technical Advisory Committee was concerned about any needs for budget augmentation to develop this plan or augment it. We've done all of this and intended to continue to do all of this within the existing budget that's been established for processing the Habitat Conservation Plan, so there's no increase in costs. This slide, again, out of the IDRIS, is to illustrate part of the approach that the Technical Advisory Committee took to gauge the feasibility of the plan. What it simply shows is release rates on the left side and various percentage of reductions. We've highlighted the red to show that in order to save 204 acre feet on a 90-day reduced release program, we would only have to reduce our flows by 19%, which we think that in an average wet winter is more than doable. And then we carried the schedule out just to look at the further numbers. The magic 500 acre foot a day or 500 acre feet of savings requires something a little less than a 50% reduction, which in a wet year, again, could definitely be a feasible approach to take. Next slide. Costs are always important. We took this one, again, out of the IDRIS. The important cell to look at is in the lower right. The numbers outside the brackets, the range $22 to $160 per acre foot illustrates what would happen if we were able to operate the plan on the low end of cost and achieve the high end of savings. So if we spent as much as $10,000 a year reading the gauges and coordinating with resource agencies and saved 500 acre feet, that would equate to $160 an acre foot, $22 an acre foot. On the other end of that, if for some reason we spend the higher amount of money and save the lower amount of water, it rises all the way up to 160. We think the number is somewhere in between and probably closer to the lower end, which is definitely then an item that we can handle within our budgets, less than $100 an acre foot to balance the reservoir. Next slide. This one's not pertinent necessarily to your agency. We have been taking this same presentation to all five of the South County entities. You happen to be number five on the list. We saved the most important for last. And the other agencies have scheduled it different ways. Most of them, by the way, have taken a position of receiving
time. It seems like we'd be relatively comfortable in a typical wet year of reducing the flows and not having an impact on the species. Is that correct?
Yes, very much so.
So where do we go from here in terms of going forward with this? What I know right now we're just going to receive and file, but do you expect to have action by all five agencies to initiate this?
Well, actually, your agency is the fifth one. So far, no agency has objected to the program. Based on that, we will take a resolution to our Board of Supervisors. Since so far there's no objection, that would probably be on their consent agenda, and that resolution directs us to implement the plan as written. That being said, I've been reporting to the other agencies and now yours that had this plan been approved, say, 6 months ago, our cost to operate to date would probably have been zero. Because we just don't have the conditions that would allow us to move it forward. So this is very much not a typical year. Although the stream is in a gaining flow position, even with the small amount of rain that we've had, the critical area is closer to the dam with a much smaller streamside aquifer. So we don't really feel that it would be appropriate in a season like the one we're having to attempt flow reductions. But we're hopeful to be on board and on track, and if we do get large rains late this season, we might be able to do some reductions. But other than that, it's looking like it'll be next year, the next winter season, before we implement it. I would expect to be in front of my board based on scheduling with the resolution directing us to move it forward in mid-April.
I want to express my appreciation. I know that it has taken a long time to get here, and thanks for sticking with it, and hopefully we're going to see some improvements for all of us.
Hopefully we will, yes.
Okay. Councilmember Guthrie?
Earlier in your presentation, you mentioned, and I'm not sure which agency it was. Earlier in your presentation, you mentioned that one of the other agencies, I'm going to assume it was Fish and Game, but it had some serious concerns about the implementation of this plan. I'm wondering, can you give us some idea what those concerns were?
I'm trying to think. The resource agencies have not expressed any serious concerns.
Oh, maybe I misunderstood. Okay.
And the zones zoning ahead with the program.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Mark, thanks for taking time and joining us this evening. And this is a receive and file for us as well as it's agendized. So, in terms of special presentation. So.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, that takes us to item 6 on our agenda this evening. Move that all ordinances presented tonight be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. This takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to come forward and comment on items that are not published on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any action on items not published on the agenda. Those of you who do wish to come forward, if there are any, we would ask that you abide by the 3-minute rule. Please address the council as a whole. Anyone in the audience who would like to come forward during community comments and suggestions, once again, items not published on this evening's agenda. Anyone? Seeing none, we will close community comments and suggestions, and we'll go to item 8, which is our consent agenda. This is a group of agenda items that the council normally approves in one action unless there are individual items on consent that individual council members would like to pull for a separate action or further clarification or discussion. This is also an opportunity for the public once again to come forward and comment on items published on the consent agenda. Those this evening are items 8A through 8I. Before we bring this to the council, I would give the public an opportunity once again to come forward on those consent items. If any of you would like to make comments on any of the consent items, this would be the opportunity. Okay, seeing none, we will close public comment on the consent agenda. What is the will of the council? Any items this evening?
I'd like to pull 8B, Mr. Mayor. 8B.
8B?
Yes. Okay with all except 8D. I wasn't here for the last meeting. I want to abstain from voting on the minutes, approval of the minutes.
I'm sorry, did you say 8B boy or 8D David?
I didn't mention 8D because I just realized that I wasn't at that meeting. Okay. I probably shouldn't be voting on the minutes. I did want to pull, and I do want to pull 8B as in boy.
Okay, we can still do your abstain on 8D for the roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Okay. Councilmember Fellows, 8B.
Yeah. Mr. Mayor and colleagues, I talked a little bit with Mrs. Craich about the mileage, the per mile reimbursement. I left town for a couple of weeks. I missed the last meeting. I came back to town, and I think in that 2 weeks, gas had gone up like 30 cents a gallon, and I believe in the a few weeks before that, it had gone up maybe a total of 60 cents a gallon in our area. It's my understanding from talking to Angie that this is a figure, this 48.5 cents per mile is a figure that comes from the IRS and may not be changeable, but it seems to me that it's already out of date, 48.5 cents. When gas has gone up about 60 cents a gallon in California. It's much lower in other parts of the country, and maybe this is a figure that can't be changed. But I think, to be fair to people, employees who use their own vehicles, the figure should be closer to 3 cents a gallon more than that, 51.5 cents.
Okay. Angie, can you comment on that?
Well, historically, we've always used the IRS rate. It is optional, but the option is to go with actual costs, which is very cumbersome to figure out because that includes depreciation, insurance, things like that. So I can look into it. I would probably recommend that we go ahead and improve this today, and that way we're at the higher rate while I look at to see what other cities are doing and see how much or how long the calculation would actually take to increase it. The thing is, too, the rate is set, and sometimes the IRS does change it. When we had the Hurricane Katrina, they increased it for, I think, 6 months. So as long as I watch it, they may increase it because of the rising gas prices. And then, too, it fluctuates. You know, next month the gas prices may go back down, and we're still at the 48 cents. So, it's really just it's an ease for us as far as not having to get the documentation and things like that, but I can do that.
Can I ask a question, Mr. Mayor? Angie, who does the calculation? Is it the employee that would have to calculate actual cost?
Okay, is that your motion?
Yes, it is.
Okay, we have a motion on 8B. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Council Board Member Fellows?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Arnold?
Yes.
Council Board Member Costello?
Yes.
Council Board Member Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara?
Yes, thank you. All right, that takes us to our public hearing this evening. Item 9A, consideration of Development Code Amendment Number 06-004. Good evening, Kelly.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. Before I get into the actual staff report, I'd like to bring to the council's attention a formal request has been made by a majority of the property owners within the sub-area 2 area who would like to see this item continue to a date uncertain. Specifically, they would like additional time to basically coordinate with all of the affected property owners and also to review just the issues a little bit more thoroughly. So there was a letter that was distributed to the council earlier this evening. You got all that? Okay. That outlines this request. So I'd be happy to answer questions, but that is the request at this point.
Okay. The letter's from you, Mark, that we all have in front of us. Did you want to make any, do you want to add anything to this?
Not specifically.
Okay. Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I just wanted to also extend that the staff recommends addressing that recommendation. We think there's some benefits given the issues that the neighbors could make some progress on.
Okay. The fact that this was noticed as a public hearing, I'll leave it up to you since I'm recognizing some stakeholders in this as well in the audience. It's your decision. I think probably clearly you know, the council will more than likely continue this item. You can offer your public hearing this evening. I'll give you an opportunity to do that, or you can wait until it comes back. It's up to you, but since it was noticed and you took the time to be here, I want to give you an opportunity to speak if you want to, or you can wait. It's your call. So that's an invitation to open the public hearing briefly for those who are interested. Okay, please, that we're going to take the extra time to nail down some of the loose ends. That way, when it does come back, I think we'll all be in a better position to hopefully move forward in some fashion. So any comments regarding this, council members? Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we continue item 9A to a date uncertain.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor, Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Item 10, continued business. 10A is consideration of the adoption of the 5-year radar speed survey for West Branch and East Grand Avenue.
Good evening, Mayor, Council people. This is a continuation of the November 28th meeting. At that meeting and a previous meeting, we adopted a resolution accepting the speed survey for all the arterial and collector streets in town. At that time, you wanted further research performed on East Grand Avenue and West Branch. So just as a quick summary, this is what we'll be recommending this evening. West Branch Street from Rancho Parkway to Briscoe Road. We want to keep that at the 40-mile-per-hour speed limit. West Branch Street from Briscoe Road to Vernon Street, change it to 45 miles per hour from the existing 40 miles per hour. And East Grand Avenue, basically from Oak Park Boulevard all the way to Halcyon Road, keep it at 35 miles per hour. Previously, we had suggested the top two for West Branch Street, but East Grand Avenue had previously recommended increasing the speed limit to 40 miles per hour. One concern that the council had at that time was the commercial driveways for three particular properties: Washington Mutual, the Girls Restaurant / Cookie Crock, and for Midstate Bank. The Girls Restaurant, I see there's a considerable rise, a hump that people have to get over when they're driving. And here's the western entrance for the Girls Restaurant. Now, when we looked into that, we found that it's a concern, and it's a valid concern, but it really does not pose a problem on East Grand Avenue because there is a middle turn lane. So it does act as a buffer. Cars do have to cross two lanes of traffic, but they are allowed to park temporarily within that middle lane, wait for traffic to clear, and they'd be able to safely negotiate into the lane of traffic. briefly summarize, on East Grand Avenue from Halcyon to Oak Park, the council concerns that you also had at that time were heavy RV traffic going towards the beach, coordination of the speed limit with Grover Beach, and safety considerations for the crosswalk, specifically one at Juniper, which is not a controlled intersection. There's no stop sign or signals. Grover Beach is currently at 35 miles per hour, and we discussed that on November 28th. And they had no problem with us changing our speed limit. They have a different topography, the way that their streets are a lot more signals in sequence. Ours are more uninterrupted. And the crosswalk, we did check the sight lines along each side and found that it was in keeping with Caltrans recommendations. It's a relatively straight visual line along East Grand Avenue for the most part. But going back to our engineering study, we did measure the 85th percentile speeds and found them to be 37 to 39 miles per hour. Now, just as a brief summary, speed limits are established by the 2003 MUTCD California Supplement Chapter 8, and this was somewhat of a change from the way Caltrans used to do it, in that it used to be that where the 85th percentile speed was measured, you could go to the nearest 5 mile per hour increment below that speed. A couple of years ago, there was a court case that happened to involve an attorney in Newport Beach, and it was determined as a result of that case that it would be the nearest 5 mile per hour increment. Going by that criteria, we would have to raise it to the 40 mile per hour speed limit. However, the Municipal Uniform Traffic Control Device, MUTCD, does allow 5 mile per hour downward adjustment for other factors, occasion, to lowering it to the previous standard to the lower 5 mile per hour speed limit. And that's what we're recommending this evening. The other one is West Branch Street, and a concern that council had was lack of sidewalks on the north side of the street. West Branch goes east and west. As you can see, there is not a sidewalk. However, there is crushed gravel. It looks like Class 2 base, and in some place, kind of a DG'd soft granite that does provide a good walking surface. There's plenty of room, plenty of right-of-way. There's another concern looking west from Old Ranch towards Rodeo Drive. As you can see, it's not optimal, but it is fairly weather-resistant. Here's another one, the same one looking from Old Ranch Road towards Vernon Street. And again, you can see between Briscoe Road in the distance and Rancho Parkway, there is existing sidewalk. What you don't see in this picture is off to the right, to the north, there is St. Patrick's parochial school. So on West Branch Street, again, council concern, lack of sidewalks. The 85th percentile speed was measured at 44 miles per hour. So by this, we'd have to go to the next highest, 5 mile per hour increment. We did look for everything else. There really wasn't a lot to go on in terms of justifications by the code. The commercial driveways does not apply here because everything, the roadway was constructed to arterial road standards. Every driveway is the classic commercial entrance. And we checked the accident history, and there basically is none over the last 5 years. There was a fatality 6 years ago, but it wasn't the result of the roadway design. So at this time, we'd like to recommend raising the speed limit from 40 miles per hour to 45 miles per hour from Vernon Street to Briscoe, and keep the posted speed limit between Rancho Parkway and Briscoe Road at the existing 35 miles per hour. We actually had one more recommendation.
Mike, can I? You yes, said 35 there. I think it's actually 40 on your graphic here. So,
I stand corrected. And the other alternatives you might consider that's in your staff report for West Branch is you may determine the pedestrian safety to be the basis for maintaining the existing 40 mile per hour.
Before we go to questions, I want to kind of add a statement and it's based on a conversation that I had with Mike and Don this afternoon, And I was going to report on this during council communication, but Councilmember Guthrie and I had an opportunity to meet with Steve and Don and Caltrans and Slocog. I can't remember who else was there. I think that was pretty much it. On the Briscoe House in 101, trying to come up with a strategy for mitigation of the circulation issues with that particular location. And towards the end of that meeting, it was a very productive meeting, and there were some frustrating twists and turns. Towards the end, we had a kind of a brainstorm about the possibility, and if you recall back on Briscoe Halcyon, one of the alternatives was hook ramps at West Branch and Old Ranch Road. That created a considerable amount of concern with Caltrans because of the proximity to the on-ramp at Grand Avenue. And so what we came up with as a potential strategy, which is being worked out by our consulting engineers right now, Wood Rogers, is the potential for moving that set of hook ramps, essentially duplicating what we have at Camino Mercado at Rodeo and West Branch Street. And because, as you well know, we've always discussed the possibility of closing off the on and off ramp under the bridge, which causes a lot of the problem. So at any rate, I don't want to go into it to a greater depth, but it looks very promising right now as a viable alternative and at a reasonable price when you compare it to some of the other rather intrusive requirements or engineering alternatives. It seems doable, and it seems doable in a relatively short period of time. I'm being optimistic here. But if that being the case, my discussion with Mike and Don this afternoon was that, you know, whatever the council chooses to do, this is just additional information. But if we accept the analysis that Mike has provided this evening with regard to the 45 mile an hour, the question of implementing it, which would include new signage and all of the rest of it, I just wanted to share that with you, that that's also an alternative this evening, is that we can accept the analysis if you so choose to do that, but we could, in fact, table the implementation until we determine whether or not this is going to be a viable alternative for Briscoe Halcyon. So I wanted to just put that out on the table for folks to think about as we move forward. Given that, are there questions for Mike on this report? Jim?
What's the speed limit between Camino Mercado and Oak Park? Is it also 35? Because we're talking about changing it from Briscoe to Camino Mercado down to 35. What's the speed limit from Camino Mercado going north? Are we just going to have one little segment that's 35, or is it all 35 from there on?
Well, actually, what we're suggesting is 40 miles per hour between Briscoe Road and Rancho Parkway.
Okay.
So there's considerable difference between Rancho Parkway and Camino Mercado. But between Rancho Parkway and Oak Park, I believe it's 40 miles per hour.
So, 40 miles per hour. So we've only got one change. We're going from 45 to 40. We're not going up or down after that.
Correct.
Okay, that's the question I have. Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Referring to the mayor's comments as far as potentially a controlled access, I guess my only question would be, and this might be for Tim, usually we have the chief of police when we're talking about this, is the enforceability, because I don't, where are we in our time frame? How soon is this update need to take place before we have an invalid speed limit?
Well, the speed surveys are performed every 5 years, and so I don't know how long it'll be till this is implemented, but if it is 5 years, I would suggest going forward with the recommendation.
If it has been longer than 5 years, you're obviously risking enforcement.
Okay. That'd be my only concern, though.
Well, we're trying to make the next step cycle. So I think we're going to make a good faith effort to make this as short a time period as we possibly can. Balance that against putting in new signage and then having ultimately a controlled intersection there and having to take it back out. because the percentiles have changed. So I'd rather roll the dice right now and hope for the best, see if we can make the next STIP cycle, and see where that leaves us. Do you want to make comments, Steve?
Yeah, well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think maybe the thought was delaying it until we complete the study and then having
right. So, you know, we got a fair amount of optimism back from the people who were there. So I'm led to believe that perhaps this is a strategy that might take root and we can move forward fairly quickly with it. But obviously there'll be a time frame between having the design approved and how long construction is going to take. So if that time stretches out and it's a will of the council, then maybe we can go ahead with it at that time, if that would be okay.
Can I ask you, give an idea? I mean, what are we talking, 3 or 4 signs that we're talking about changing here? I mean, between Grand and Briscoe, changing signs.
There probably was 3 signs and some pavement markings, changing the 40 to 45.
And so what do you think we're talking about cost? I mean,
maybe a couple $1,000, $1,000 to $2,000.
I have a comment, but.
Okay. Now, this is not a public hearing, but if there are members of the audience that would like to come forward and comment on this, any takers? Okay, we'll close the public comment on 10A and bring this back, and now you can make your comment.
Okay. I guess my feeling would be here is we are looking at a relatively low cost, and while I think it's great because I do think that the alternative we talked about the other day would be a great alternative and would be not only inexpensive and short term, is still way out there as far as actual construction goes. I mean, I couldn't imagine us getting it done inside of 3 years just on getting Caltrans to, you know, to review the plans. So I think realistically we could go through here and implement and spend the, you know, $2,000 it would take to be in compliance and be done with this. Because otherwise, yeah, we're just going to come back and look at it again in a year. I mean, we'd probably spend, I mean, I'm exaggerating, but $200 just looking at it in this council meeting with all the staff time and everything. So I'd be inclined to say, let's go ahead and approve it and move forward with it, spend the $2,000 now, and if things change, they're going to change far enough, and they're going to change radically, that $2,000 buried in the cost of this the improvement at 101 will be nothing. So I'd be inclined to say, let's move forward and get an approval and be in compliance and move on.
I suspect we don't have a feel for
if we can. I'm kind of on the fence still, though, about which way to go. I think the mayor's comments are good ones too. But I know the mayor knows this. It takes a heck of a long time to get anything done. So it seems like changing it, accepting the study, the recommendations, changing it now and getting it done with is what I could support.
Okay, Councilmember Costello.
Well, I wonder if we have much of an enforcement problem out there right now as it is. I suspect that there's limited value to us to making the change at this point. I think I'm inclined to think that if we have something that may be around the corner on the improvements with the hook ramps, even if it's a couple of years out, that we should go ahead and hold off on making the change. Unless we get some serious feedback from the police department that says this is an area that does have a real enforcement problem and we should go to the 45, I think I'd say let's not go to the 45 now unless we hear something from the police department saying that it really is a problem. We need to address it now. And the other changes, I think keeping the speed limit 35 on Grand is appropriate. We should do that. And we should keep the speed limit at 40 up on West Branch, Rancho Parkway to Briscoe.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I've had a problem all along when we don't set the speed limits based on what we're required to because of the enforcement. And so while we can say that there aren't any enforcement issues there. I really have a problem with the fact that we're going to say we're going to basically keep it at an invalid speed limit, and I'm not going to go into the details of what that means, since I've done it before and I've gotten the evil eye. I will say that I do think that realistically, even as optimistic as we want to be, and I think it sounds like a great idea, I think we're looking at least 3 years and maybe more. And I really would rather people not start to question whether or not the speed limits that we have are enforceable or not. I'd like to believe that every speed limit that we have is an enforceable speed limit. So I think I would support going ahead with the changes today. And then if down the road we are, and I'm not cavalier about spending $2,000, but I do believe that our speed limits
I think the bottom line for me is once again, do we even have a speeding issue? Do we even have an enforcement issue? If we were to check with the PD and find out that there hasn't been a citation written there in a year, I guess my question would be why? You know, why are we even paying attention to it? On the other hand, I'm listening to what the point the Mayor Pro Tem is making, and there's some validity in having a conforming speed limit, and it's something obviously that we should strive for. So I guess the deciding factor here is, to what degree would we remain in limbo, I guess, with the speed limit if we were to leave it the way it is, rolling the dice and hoping for the best on a quick decision in terms of the viability of having a controlled intersection right in the middle of this segment. So, that being said, I can go one way or the other. I think I'm still tending towards right now saving the money, and I think $2,000, the figure of $2,000 is probably lowballing it when you start talking about closing off lanes and putting crews out there to repost and stencil new speed limits and new signs. So, again, if we don't have a huge enforcement problem out there, I would opt to save the money. So I guess, in the absence of not knowing one way or the other, if that's a high problem area in terms of citations, speeding citations, I would stick with my original recommendation. But I can, I can certainly support the direction that the council wants to go one way or the other. So, I think I would entertain a motion on this at present.
Mr. Mayor, I'd make a motion that we adopt the recommendations from staff to keep the speed limit at 35 on East Grand Avenue and to keep the speed limit at 40 on West Branch from Rancho Parkway to Briscoe Road.
As a consent item? Is that a yes? Okay. So we wouldn't waste the $200 that was referred to at some point. Okay. That's not an evil eye, just a clarification.
I know the difference.
Okay. We have a motion. Did I get a second? I'll second it. Roll call. Any discussion?
Discussion.
Okay.
If the motion includes determining what citations have been issued or not, it should also include the cost, because the cost was another factor that we had no idea. I noticed a bid or something from Caltrans to restripe out on 46, I think it was, or 166, and it was almost $1 million or something like that. So it could be quite a big expense. Could the motion include that as well?
I don't think the motion needs to increase consider the cost. My consideration here is if we have an issue that there is a speed or an enforcement issue, then we're going to need to do it. So I think we need to incur that cost. So I don't want it conditional on the cost. I want it conditional on the speed issue and the issue of enforcement.
Thank you.
comment. Can I just ask one quick question?
Sure. Yeah.
Don or Mike, do you remember how long it took to get Caltrans to approve the light at Camino Mercado? You have an estimate of how long that took? just the traffic light.
The design, you mean?
Yes.
It was a long time. Probably
3 years.
It was at least a couple years. Yeah, maybe three. You might be right there. Yeah.
I just remember when we approved the senior condominium project up there. That sort of started the clock.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems like quite a while ago, more like 5 years ago. But
somewhere in there.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions, discussions? All right. We have a motion and a second, then. Roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
No.
Councilmember Fellows?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Arnold?
No.
Okay. Motion carries. Thank you. Our delegate, too. Is that correct, Mayor Pro Tem?
That is correct.
Okay.
I've attended two meetings so far. Right now, what CATRO is looking for from a very diverse group of people is some kind of consensus on whether the 584 acres that the county owns should be sold to the state so that they can continue operating the off-highway vehicle park there. There's been an offer of $4.8 million, I think, as everyone probably saw in the paper. And so I don't realistically see how this group is going to come to a consensus. The makeup is too diverged to truly agree. And so what I've kind of wanted to bring back to the council is I think what we should probably be looking to recommend is whether we value the tourists that come and use the park and consider that a viable asset to our community, because I couldn't tell you right now with all certainty whether or not selling the park or continuing to operate it under some other potential options would be better for the off-highway vehicles. I have a suspicion what I think is best, but I don't believe it's based on any science as of yet. We're working on a matrix. We're going through all the pros and cons of a multitude of options. And so what I'm, I guess, looking for right now, and as I've expressed to the task force, is right now the city is neutral on this. I actually am a pro off-road highway vehicle user, which I've expressed to the mayor, and he said keep an open mind. And so I'm definitely letting any personal bias that comes out in the meeting, let everybody know that that is my personal bias and not necessarily the opinion of the city. But so right now I'm looking forward, I guess, whether the council as a whole has I guess how they look upon the tourists that are coming in, because realistically, the other impacts, I'm not sure how they really would impact us as a city. I think it really becomes more of whether or not we consider the tourism important or not. So I guess with that information, maybe as questions or if we want to just have a discussion.
What is the, if the sale were to go through, what would change? What specifically would change?
Bosciano, but beyond that, he really is looking to see what the welfare or what everybody would like to see done. But so right now, if the park department takes, state parks take it, the feeling is that they are definitely pro keeping the park open. There are those who would like to see the park close, and their feeling is that if the county has control of the land, that they would have a greater chance. There's a lot of debate on whether or not the park would close, because a majority of the land is still owned by the state, and there are little pockets within the county land that are actually state-owned or private-owned, and so there's there are some rights that the state has to have access to those little pockets within the county land. And then along the beach, they have, I want to say it's 200 feet of access. So even though the county's piece is a prime piece of the off-road park, it wouldn't preclude, it wouldn't force the park's closure. There are some risks the county would take on. One would be liability, and also there's a anticipated around $1 million+ in maintenance fees for the protected species that are out there right now. So that's been one of the discussions as well, that couldn't the county even afford to not have the state operate this right now? So, but right now, that's why I'm having a hard time telling you if we say sell, this will happen, or if we say keep it and lease, this will happen, because there's a chance the county may say, well, the land's going to be more valuable in the future, so we'll just rather give you another 25-year lease. But then they'll have to factor in, obviously, the present value of money, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why I'm unable to come back and say if we vote this way, this will be the result. I don't know at this point.
Well, I guess at least from my vantage point here, Ed, we're probably having right now, based on what you've told us, the same level of confusion that maybe your committee is. I mean, if I don't, based on what you've told me, I don't have enough information to tell you one way or the other where I'm coming from. If in those discussions it is determined from the state that the use is going to remain unchanged, tourists are still going to be able to come here and use it, and it's simply a fiscal transaction. They're getting out of a lease agreement, and they're making a sale, and they're generating some income as a result of that, which counties are doing. But the use is going to stay the same. Level of tourism, I don't know. Then maybe that would be a factor. But just based on what you've shared, I don't have enough information. I can tell you this much, and that is I don't care if the county manages it, owns it and manages it, or the state owns it and manages it. Whoever does has to do a better job, because every time during peak periods during the summer when we get everybody hitting the beach in those vehicles, our emergency rooms fill up to capacity. Mm-hmm. And that tells me that the on-the-beach enforcement is not occurring to the level that it should, because those folks get out there and get wild and crazy, and as a result, bones get broken and our emergency rooms fill up. And so that's been my concern right from day one. Do I want to stop it? Not necessarily, but I think it needs to be managed and enforced better. I don't care if the state does it or the county does it.
And see, that's why my take is that we, as a council, should just be making a recommendation that we think the tourism business that is generated from the park is a valuable asset to our community. And then if the group determines that selling to the state is the best way to ensure that, then that would be the stance that we would take. Since right now, based on what I have, I believe that is truly the state is the best insurance to ensure that the park will stay open. I believe that is that. But right now, because we're working through that process, I don't want to assume that. So that's why I came at it from the take of if we value the tourism, then we would just say that that's what we're valuing.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, I've been waiting years to weigh in on this subject, and I would rather see Ed take back comments from those of us who have comments rather than the majority opinion, if that's the way it works. I think you bring up a good point, or Mary, you bring up a good point, where Larry Foreman, I think he's the Dr. Larry Foreman, is now the chief of staff at the hospital. And they're plagued with injuries and people who are injured to the point of dying out there. And people come in and give false information and don't pay their bills. And so we're stuck with the money. I'd like to see RVs remain on the beach. I'd like to see dune buggies go. And I think the only way to really do it and make it work is do it over a 10-year period. You take the usage this year and then reduce it by 10% of that figure every year so that the local economy gets to adjust over the 10 years.
Can I ask a question, and then I have comments while on the tourism, but from what I've read,
they would like to find another alternative. There are concerns with Grover Beach has, and I think we should have to some degree as well, is if the entrance were to be moved severely south, that all of a sudden it might generate more business for Santa Maria, potentially. And Grover is the one that's obviously very concerned right now because a lot of their Grand Avenue business is geared to that. So they're definitely not enthused about seeing the entrance move too far. There are there's one proposal, I think, to take it in on 22nd Street and go into by the RV and then come in. And there are definitely going to be impacts no matter what. One of the things that there's a group called the Condor, I think it's Condor Group or Condor Environmental, did a study on the seven other accesses, and I just got the report today, so I haven't had a chance to review it, but there's no doubt that some are going to have more. One of the concerns with any new access is that initially, at least, it'll have more impact than the existing the access. I would like to comment on your comments as far as the one doctor that has raised concerns, because my take is if you do something wrong, you're going to get injured. And so, therefore, I think one of the problems that we have with the park is people come out there, don't familiarize themselves with it, and then they get hurt. And it has nothing to do with the sport. It has nothing to do with the park. It has to do completely with the fact that people, if I let my five-year-old drive a car, does that mean then that all people should not be driving cars and we should phase that out? And so, I mean, I do take offense to that doctor's comments because my children ride and they wear all the safety equipment and they're with me and they have no problems. Accidents do happen, and I'm never going to say that something's not going to happen, but just by the sheer fact of this sport that someone could get hurt, then we should ban all bikes. We should probably ban walking.
It's not that someone could get hurt. It's that people do get hurt.
Well, people get hurt, though, riding bikes. People get hurt, you know, riding skateboard. I mean, we can close down everything that there's any chance of. So for that standpoint, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, but I do think that for a city standpoint, I'd be more than happy to pass along your personal beliefs. And like I say, I'm sharing my personal beliefs, but I think as a city, we should also have a city policy on this. And I don't think, and like I say, you're more than welcome to come to the meetings. The meetings are on Thursdays at 5:30 in the community center in Oceano. So there is a fair amount of public, and there's no doubt your point of view is represented. So, but I think from a city standpoint, we need to separate, and that's why I
said the big numbers that get generated. Granted, there's a lot of people out there, but when you know if you went down and looked at Pier Avenue, it's not exactly one of the thriving economic centers in our area. And if the numbers they're talking about were true, that would be downtown San Luis Obispo. So for us as a community, I think we make money on the gas, and that they fill up their trucks and their vehicles on their way out, probably, and on their way in, and we do in fact enjoy some income from that. But as far as it really being a huge tourism driver, the village is far bigger a tourism driver for the city of Arroyo Grande than I think the dunes are. So I guess that's my input specifically on the tourism side of it. There are a lot of people out there, but they're camping.
Yeah, there's about the numbers are there's roughly 2 million. I guess some more background because I assumed everybody knew a little more about it. It is the only drive-on beach in the entire state of California. So basically, less than 0.5% of California's beaches you can actually take vehicles on. So there isn't an option for moving it somewhere else. Oregon has it, Mexico has it, but not California. So there is a draw. Whether or not, I mean, I've seen them at the Domino's Pizza. I can't say that they're anywhere else, but I do believe there is an impact to other things other than gas. Whether it's, I mean, grocery stores are again.
I'm just saying that it's not huge.
I don't think it's a negative. It is the largest park draw in the state of California, though.
So. I'll chime in briefly. I think that. There probably is a positive impact to our economy from the tourist services that go on. Just the grocery stores. I see a lot of people in the Albertsons that are here as tourists. I don't necessarily want to close it down or restrict access. I think the answer is better enforcement. But I don't have a whole lot other than that to go on at this point. That I think it's a positive economic impact on the city. I think that there should be some better enforcement out there, and I'm not recommending any change one way or the other beyond that at this point.
Okay, so if I kind of take back that we think that the tourism adds an economic value to the city,
and we, as a city, would like to see potentially the rules of the park enforced better. That would be a fair assessment of what I've heard.
Well, at least. That and the fact that we don't know at this point to what extent the transfer of terms of people coming into our emergency rooms. And Chuck raises a good point. If you know those folks come in from different parts of the state and they get their emergency room treatment, that's the last that Catholic Healthcare West hears from them. And so if you back that scenario out and work on the beach to make sure that they don't get injured to begin with, or at least we minimize it through enforcement. Somebody who gets a, you know, $300 citation for not doing, taking the time with their children or themselves like you do with yours, should be penalized. And so they learn that lesson. And I think that's where the enforcement aspect can help all the way around.
I have a question. Ed, do you have any idea what, I think we all would agree that more enforcement would be a good idea, but it sounds to me like it would, do you have any idea what it would cost? It sounds like it would be pretty
We haven't discussed that because it really is a state park issue, and that's why I tried to define the issue that I saw as a city, because, I mean, realistically, since the state park is the one that operates it and their goal is to continue to operate it, their ownership would make probably operation easier from that standpoint. We haven't got into any of that at all as an issue. Out of 2 million people, I think, I'm going to contact Catholic Healthcare West and just see really what is the financial impact of them on bills not paid from people using the dunes, because, I mean, I'm not going to dispute there are people that have no clue when they go out there, and the first thing they do is they hop on and they go as fast as they can, and for anybody that's been in the dunes knows they're nice and gradual as you're going away from the ocean, and then they drop off real severe. Once you know that, it's not a real problem. But I think I got a good feel for how to share the city's concerns. And like I say, I won't take a position on the sale, but I will tell them that we do believe that the park has an economic benefit to the city, and we would like to see additional enforcement.
Now, I see Jim grimacing back there because he doesn't agree with your statement, I guess, and I don't either, that's the consensus.
It's a minimal financial or economic impact to the city of Arroyo Grande. It may be bigger for Grover Beach. I mean, your point about Domino's, I mean, the car washes do good business too, but I'm not sure that's a big...
I guess, is there a negative, I mean, a larger financial negative?
Well, if you go down to Oceano and look at that, you know, those two hotels down there, yeah, there's some money spent there. But to the city of Arroyo Grande, I suspect it's minimal.
One thing we'll know more, unfortunately, the timing is bad. Cal Poly is doing a study right now on this issue and just to see what the impact of the park is. But, again, it probably won't be. We're trying to get them in to at least give us some of their numbers right now. But it isn't quantified as of today.
Well, it could be. You know, timing is the issue. I agree with Jim on this, Ed. And so I hope that that you can convey the concerns back to the committee.
I will do that.
So, okay, anything else for Ed to take back? Okay, got enough?
I got enough.
All right.
Thank you.
That takes us to item 13, city manager items. Anything tonight, Steve?
No, sir.
You want to comment on your injury? No?
No, just anxious to adjourn at this point.
Well, I'd like to. It's worth mentioning.
You want to talk at all about your ego and all of the rest of that?
It's worth mentioning that even though the guy's in pain, he's here.
Yeah, that's true. That's only because our city attorney, Tim Carmel, shamed him. by comparing injuries and performance thereof afterwards. So,
but unlike our city attorney, I will have a basketball comeback.
Okay. Any council communication? I did want to underscore the fact once again that based on the decision of the council, we did, Jim, and I met with Caltrans and SOLCOG and our staff, and as we indicated earlier, connected to that other agenda item, we're optimistic in terms of hopefully finally a viable fix for Briscoe Halcyon. So we're going to try and keep that on the front, everyone's front burner, and move that along. Okay, any other council communication, staff communication this evening? All right, that takes us to item 16, community comments and suggestions. Opportunity for Kristen or John to come forward. Any comments tonight? No? All right, then we'll close community comments and suggestions, and takes us to item 17, and that is adjournment.